This summer, we've had below average temperatures, above average temperatures, very dry conditions, and flooding. The weather has been stressing a lot of people out, and it's also taken a toll on some trees. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. We've got a lot of tree expertise on hand today. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, are here to talk about how to identify trees that are under stress and what you can do to help them out. ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran is also here, and Jeff, Mark, and Richard will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Iowa State University Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran is going to join us in a few minutes. But we're going to start the hour with a leafier version of Click and Clack. Tree experts this hour, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State, is here. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Charity.
And Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, also here. Hello, Mark.
It's a pleasure.
Well, and we have had some crazy weather this summer. We've had super hot periods. We've had cooler than normal periods. We've had a lot of rain and then no rain at all and then flooding. So our trees might be a little bit stressed out. Jeff, what are signs that you're seeing that this summer may have been kind of hard on our trees?
Yeah, you know, every year is different, Charity, and this really has been a we've had a smorgasbord of weird events. And what always kills me is that when somebody calls me on the phone or asks me to come out and look at their tree, they tell me that, well, last year their tree looked just fine, and this year it's dying. And I guess one of the first messages I'd like to get across is trees normally don't operate that way. And maybe later on we can get into what homeowners can look for, but trees usually don't just up and die. There's usually a progression of events that happen over several years. And unless you're looking for those signs on the tree, you might miss them. And then all of a sudden, when the tree does look like it's dying, then it looks like it's like it happened overnight. But rarely does it go on that way. So you just mentioned all the weird things that have happened in our weather, and of course all of those are brought to bear on trees, and they have long memories. They remember 1988, they remember 1993 and 2010, and you name the stressful year. And these stresses tend to build up and they accumulate. And so trees have a tough life. They can't move. They can't come inside. They have to stand out there and take it.
Well, and of course, they tend to live for a long time. And as you say, when there is trouble, that tends to sort of develop over time or show signs of it over time. So at this time of year, when you're looking around, what are some of the things that you see that tell you that a tree may be under pressure?
Yeah. And this is kind of a tough time of the year because some trees are defoliating because of the tough summer, and so it's hard to know when a tree is in trouble. One of the things that always catches my attention, and it's an easy one, is when you see fall color in July or fall color in August. So usually fall color is reserved for this time of the year or October, but that early fall coloration is a sign of stress, and people remark about that. We all, and more subtly, leaf size can be a sign that there is something wrong or a symptom that something is wrong. And if you look at a twig or a branch sample from a tree and look at the growth from this year, and it's pretty easy to tell based on the color of the twig, if you can see that the twig growth has been slowing down the last couple of years, then that also would be another sign. And then, of course, things that hit you over the head are dead branches in the canopy or a thinning crown. These are things that often show up when it's too late to reverse the trend. But those are also pretty obvious symptoms that something has gone wrong with the plant.
Well, and Mark, I know you've spent a lot of time out in the field. A lot of it's soggy lately. What do you see? What are some trends that you're seeing this year?
Well, the one thing that I get a lot from folks, too, is all the trees are dying. And what I always come across is every single situation in your yard is usually a different situation. And even the trees in your yard might be a different situation depending on how they are in the landscape. So it's really important to look at the situation. And in most cases, believe it or not, not all the trees are dying. Sometimes it's very species specific. I often get all the pines are dying throughout the countryside. Well, there are some trees with problems, but there are some other species that are not. I'm seeing the same kind of things that Jeff is seeing, early fall color. And the one thing I look a lot, the thing we have to remember about growth is if it grew good this year, it's because it had a good growing season last year. So the thing to be looking for with this year is what kind of growth do we get next year? So when we see trees next year, if we're starting to see problems, look at next year's growth because it really is dependent on this year. Those buds and that growth on most species is predetermined. Now, on some species, they can, if the weather's good, they can kind of expand and keep growing and kind of stay with it. But if you have a tree that's showing very poor growth, it really was because of the year before or the year before. As Jeff said, though, that can add up. In trees, as he said, remember, and they work very hard, and if they're working to replace what they lost before, they're stressed. And that stress means that their mechanisms to fight off those insects and those diseases, often those barriers are lowered, and so they're more susceptible. And as Jeff said, all those things add up. But I'm seeing some early fall color. I'm seeing some species where the crowns are starting to thin. And the thing to remember is look at the top of the crown. I often get, well, my tree is thinning at the bottom or inside. And a lot of species, that's self-shading. And so they're thinning out themselves. Branches will actually prune themselves because those inner branches, if they're not efficient, they shut the system off. The tree shuts the system off and those branches die. That's how they keep the tree alive. But if you're seeing thinning at the very top and at the tips and those crowns don't look very full, and as Jeff said, this time of year, that's harder to tell. But those are the kind of things that you want to look for.
I need to ask a question about flooding because I think obviously a lot of people are worried about that. And we've seen the water come up. We've seen the water go down. Jeff, when you have trees in an area that doesn't flood frequently but does flood in a year like this one where they've got soggy feet for a while, how much damage does that do? I realize it depends on species, but how concerned should we be?
Yeah, it is species dependent. A lot of the trees in floodplains can handle that. But I do worry when floodwaters remain for long periods of time or the soils remain saturated for long periods of time. And so the silver maples, the hackberries, the honey locusts of the world really don't care. They'll put up with that. But if we're talking conifers, if we're talking some species of oak, then those are the ones that I'm worried about. And as we've just talked about this morning, you might not see the direct result of flooding until next year or the year after. And then it manifests itself in branch dieback and tree decline. So, but there isn't much you can do except next time plant species that are tolerant of periodic flooding in those low-lying areas.
I have a 10-year-old son who's suddenly very interested in trees and
nice.
Is commenting on every tree that we go past. And
nice.
His comment frequently lately has been as we go around the world, he'll look at a tree and he'll say, that is a terrible place for a tree.
Ah.
And we'll be in a parking lot or something like that.
So, what's his name?
Carter.
Carter.
And so I'm curious, we do see a lot of stress signs on trees that are planted in the median or planted in a little planting section in a parking lot. And I understand why people plant trees in those spaces. But should we be planting trees in those spaces?
Well, you know, when we talk about tree stress and tree decline and crown dieback, the first thing I think about is what's going on below ground. And so Carter has hit on it. I mean, when you put a tree in a parking lot or in a 4x4 foot tree coffin up along a city street, you've given that tree a couple of strikes against it. We have to think about roots and where the roots are going to grow and what things that the tree roots need in order to grow and survive. And a lot of these situations we put trees in just is unfair. Now, it's great when they survive, and there are some species that'll do that. And, of course, we need trees in urban environments to soften that harsh environment. But, man, it's tough on the roots to grow in some of these soils we place them in. So it's again matching the species to the site, and there are some species that'll do better than others.
And,
and sometimes we have to accept that if we want something there, that tree may only last 20 to 30 years, and we may have to replace that tree every 20 to 30 years if that's something that we want. But that is the challenge in those small spaces.
What are some tree species that do really well in those super challenging areas?
Well, oddly enough, we just talked about floodplain species. It seems like species that are used to living in soils that have low oxygen conditions, those are the ones that seem to do well in these urban environments, because many times these soils are compacted and soil oxygen is at a low level. And so, again, that's why you see so much honey locust planted in urban environments, because they seem to do well. And the hackberries and even the elms. Think about all the elms we're planting in the landscape now. Primarily floodplain species do quite well in urban environments.
We see a lot of trees, again, in urban environments that are being pruned by utilities companies. And, you know, I listened to you guys talk about all of the pruning advice that you give about time of year and how to prune a tree. And then I see the trees that are pruned by utilities companies that, you know, obviously they have to do what they have to do. But I'm struck, some trees seem to survive with only half a tree. But what does that do to a tree when it's being pruned out of season and not selecting the strongest leaders, et cetera, the things that we talk about all the time?
I'm going to step in real quick, yeah. Jeff. To their defense, this is Carter's wrong tree, wrong place here.
Mm-hmm.
These trees are in the wrong place, and the utility companies did not plant those. The citizens and communities and stuff planted those trees, and they're looking purely at safety. And if we look at the storms the last couple weeks and all the damage that can be done with trees in the wrong location near utility lines, they're really looking at safety. And as far as timing, Jeff can chime in here, but actually their timing actually may be better these days, because some of the research has shown on a lot of species, not oaks, but on a lot of species, pruning middle summer is not a bad time. Actually, it may increase wound response. The one thing that utility companies used to do, they used to just come in every few years and give that tree a clear head cut and buzz it like my hair is and buzz her off good. But in another year or two, that tree would put on just a plethora of sprouts and resprout and be back up in those wires. Now they are trying to do what they call target pruning, where they're trying to prune back where that tree can actually respond to those wounds and seal. And so with those kind of cuts, the one challenge is you get the bagel cut, the V cut, the C cut, the donut cut, whatever. You get all these wild cuts. But from a tree response, they're actually getting a better response from the trees.
All right, even though they look like Dr. Seuss planted them.
Right, and what they're doing in some communities, they're actually deciding, hey, we'll cut this tree down and we'll pay to move a tree 45 feet or 50 feet away from these power lines so we don't have to deal with this situation again.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State, and Mark Vitosh, DNR forester. Richard Giron's going to join us in just a second, and we'd love to hear from you with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've got a lot of tree expertise with us today with Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University, and Mark Vitosh, DNR forester. But you don't have to limit your questions to tree questions. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University horticulture specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And you can join us with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get to the phones. Paul is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call, Charity.
Sure. What's your question?
Well, I have a cherry tree in my backyard, somewhat protected and shaded a little bit, but it's about a 30-foot tall tree, so it's been around for a while. And this year, it has been blighted by some kind of a bug that's been eating the leaves down to the veins. And on top of that, the leaves all have pretty much all fallen out at this early stage in the fall. And I'm kind of wondering, is my tree getting ready to kick the bucket, or what can I do?
Well, it sounds like maybe Japanese beetles. That'd be my guess. and they will eat or destroy much of the foliage. But the good news is, even though they may defoliate a tree, they typically don't destroy it. But you should have seen, let's say, like in July, these large kind of bronze green beetles feeding on the foliage. And that's when they're present, and they feed on some of the cherries, the prunus, lindens are some of their favorites. And so they can definitely defoliate trees, but they typically do not kill the trees.
They will leave the structure of the leaf too. So if you look at the leaf itself, the leaf will still be there, but all the green will be gone, but the veins will still be there. That's one of the marks of the Japanese beetle versus the whole leaf being gone. If the whole leaf is completely gone, you could have had some other type of caterpillar.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the vein, because I'd find the leaves on the ground and it would just be these veins. So mm-hmm. I think you hit the nail on the head. I know the beetles were working on my cranberry or my raspberries, so no doubt they were probably eating my cherry trees.
Yes.
And each one of my cherries, this is my year for getting cherries, each one of them had like a blight mark on them. Not exactly a bite, but a blight mark. So do they eat the cherry itself as well, or blight it? Or
Typically not. I would suspect maybe some other insect possibly, where you have maybe a piercing of the skin, and then you get that brown spot on the surface.
So anything I need to do, or just kind of muscle through till next year and hope for the best?
Well, the tree should be fine, and I wouldn't worry about the quality of the fruit. I mean, you could use a home orchard spray, but if it's simply cosmetic damage, I wouldn't worry about it.
All right, Paul. And Richard, on the subject of cherry trees, they don't tend to live forever. They're not a particularly long-lived species, are they?
Well, they definitely insist on a well-drained soil. And if they have a good site, they can be 30, 35, 40 years old, but they're not going to be 75, 100 years old, no.
All right.
If you see some premature yellowing and stuff with all the moisture we have, that may be an indication of too much moisture in some situations, which you can't control either.
Right. So a lot of circumstances outside one's control, but it's clearly been damp up in Cedar Rapids. So let's go next to Barbara in Des Moines. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. My question is about oak trees, and specifically the number of acorns that they drop in any particular year. Where I live, it seems to be a banner year. They are just coming and coming and coming. And I'm curious to know what determines the number. And then I have one short question after that.
Okay, well, can you ask that right now? We're having kind of a little bit of trouble with your phone line, Barbara, so I'll save that question as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you want me to ask the question again?
No, we heard you. I just wanted you to also add your short question, and then we'll talk about acorns.
Okay. The short question is, will mounds of acorns damage my lawn, or should I try to somehow scoop them up?
All right. Let's talk about acorns. Barbara's seeing a lot of acorns this year in Des Moines.
So to answer Barbara's question, really the acorn production depends on the flower production in the spring. And for different species, it varies. And what we normally see with oaks, we usually get a decent crop every 3 to 6 years. And for the white oaks, they actually, from flower to actually acorn, is 1 year. For the red oaks, it's actually 2 years. So you get a lot of variation, a lot of cycle as far as your production. And then what weather we have early on often depends how well that crop does and how well it sets. This year I saw, and I think it's somewhat weather-related, I've seen some premature acorn crop where they basically are still green and they're falling to the ground, and I'm seeing some that are starting to ripen. But that's going to vary every single year. But in general, we usually have a bumper crop every 3 to 6 years. Now, in this area in eastern Iowa, we hadn't had a bumper crop for probably about 8 years, and last year we had a pretty decent crop. And from my crossings and reports, we're going to have a pretty decent crop again this year. So I would expect in the next year or two, we may go down again. So it's going to vary from year to year, even on individual trees, how well they produce.
All right. And Richard, I'll let you answer the question about her lawn. So piles of acorns
right
in the lawn.
They'll typically have to rake their leaves anyway. So during that process, they'll remove some of the acorns. They don't have to remove every single one. But if there's a large quantity, probably quite a few of them, yes.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Tom is on the line in Coon Rapids. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Good morning. I have a question about turf. I've got a type of grass that's invading my lawn. It is very, very fine blades. I guess I call it angel hair type blades. And it's near impossible to mow because the mower just lays it down. And it just lays there, and it's starting to get in other areas of the lawn.
Okay.
What is this grass, and is there anything I can do about it?
Well, when do you notice it first?
Is it
present like in May?
Yes, it's just starting off in May, and it seems to overtake the bluegrass and rye that I've got in the
yard. I'm not sure what it is. If you're seeing it in May, that would seem to suggest it's a perennial-type grass of some type. And if it's a perennial-type grass, there would be no selective way of killing it typically. You would have to destroy the entire area by some means.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
If it were an annual grass like crabgrass or foxtail, you could put on a pre-emergent in the spring. But if it's a perennial-type grass, there's typically nothing selective in most cases. So you'd have to destroy the entire area either by cultivation, a herbicide, or whatever, and then reseed or sod.
Yeah. It's just taking over the grass. I did put a herbicide down in the spring, so I don't know what else I can do, I guess.
Now, if you wish, you can take some photographs of the grass and send those to Iowa State, to Hortline, Hortline, at iastate.edu. And if we have some nice, clear photos of the plant, we can probably identify it as far as what kind of grass it is. But it sounds like some type of perennial grass.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Tom. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kyle is up next in Mason City. Hi, Kyle.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
See, I have a swamp white oak that's probably 2 or 3 years old, and in the high winds we had this spring, it got tipped over about 3 foot up off the ground, and I just kind of left it. It's sprung off maybe like 2 or 3 new shoots, new growth, a couple foot. I just wondering if I can, I mean, I know it'll continue to grow, but should I prune them back so that there's just one good leader, or I guess what are my options? What do you guys think?
Jeff?
So Kyle, describe again what happened. The tree tipped over, bent over?
Yeah, to back the story up just a little bit, a buck rubbed on it, my brand new tree 2 years ago, and I just left it, and it survived, kept growing, and the weak spot that the buck rubbed off when we had them high winds, it snapped right there.
Okay. Well, the good news is that there's still a good root system with the plant, and that there's still a functional vascular system below where the buck rubbed the tree. And so what you've described there is to find a new leader, and that's perfectly acceptable. As far as doing any pruning or tampering with the tree, I know Mark will back me up here. We've discussed this at length on this program, that you want to confine your pruning to the dormant season. And so wait till that time of the year. I prefer February, early March, but that's the safe time of the year to prune oaks. But yes, you'd want to find a new leader. Sometimes the tree will help you do that. It'll send up a shoot or a sprout below that area that's been damaged, and that will become the new leader. And 50 years from now, nobody's going to know the difference. So don't give up on it. It's kind of fun to play with trees that have suffered an insult, and many times they'll reward you with a nice tree down the road.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Kyle. Now we've got an ash tree question. Ron on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, my ash tree was hit by lightning approximately 3 or 4 years ago. About a third of the trunk bark is gone at the base, and it's about 6 feet high where the trunk, the bark has been, knocked off. And I've looked at it recently, and it looks like it's a little higher up the tree. Some of the bark is also loose in that same general area. Is this tree too far gone? Is there anything I can do to help this tree? it's an ash tree, and I know it once it's hurt, it might be a target for the ash borer.
I know Mark and I are both respectfully being quiet, letting the other one take the lead. Let me just give you my opinion that I'll get out of the way for Mr. Vitosh.
Okey-doke.
You know, we all have money that we could spend on all kinds of things. I'm looking at a new car, and I also like pizza every once in a while. I would hate to see you spend a lot of money on a tree that might be a short timer. This doesn't sound like a tree that I would invest a whole lot of money in. Now that I'm saying that without really seeing your tree, Ron, and I could be way off base, but you just identified one of the major problems we have with ash in the state, the emerald ash borer. And if you were to protect a tree, I would only use those funds to protect trees that are of high value or in the peak condition. And this tree sounds like it suffered a pretty major insult. So I've often been accused of pulling out the chainsaw too soon, but man, I don't know. That new car is looking awfully good to me.
Well, even if EAB wasn't a concern, and the thing is, if you're not already treating that tree, especially being in Bettendorf, you're in the middle of the infestation over there. So if your tree's not infested yet, it probably will be soon. But even if that wasn't a play, having that much exposed wood with an ash species basically that's fast growing, and their wound response or their response to decay, a lot of times with that big of area, eventually that's going to become decayed and that tree could become a risk. So, you know, it's one of those things. If that tree is off in an area where it's not a concern, and if it fails, you're not worried about it, then you can let it go. But if it's in an area where you're near the house, you're near the drive, a sidewalk, playground, or something like that, I would really want to look at that area, and if it's starting to decay, I really would want an arborist to evaluate to see what the potential structure of that tree is left and how safe it is that way.
And don't park under it.
Correct.
All right.
So, Ron, seriously.
Yeah. Sorry for the bad
news. Why do you laugh
Ron?
Every time you say serious? So,
Ron.
You got it?
All yeah, right. I have the tree. It looks good. There is no problem at the top of the tree, and it's between two houses, so it is a problem area.
Yeah, and the challenge that you have with looking good, the thing you have to remember, even if you have 25, 30% of the circumference of the tree gone, they live off what's left. And so that tree on top can still look green, good, and good to go. But again, it's going to come down to the structure. The other thing I would be looking for, if it was a pretty heavy lightning strike that actually caused bark to fall off, a lot of times those will also cause cracks in the trunk. So I would get someone to really look at that structure. Are you treating that tree now?
Oh, sorry. He's
Well, again, if you're listening, Ron, if you're not treating that tree already, I would still have somebody look at the structure of that tree and see what's left.
All right, Ron, thank you so much for your call. Margaret is up next in Stanley. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I enjoy your show very much. You guys laugh a lot. I have a lot of people wanting some of my rhubarb, and it looks wonderful because we've had so much rain.
Okay.
But I've always been told don't pull it after June something
mm-hmm.
or other.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you telling me?
Well, basically, it is still edible. It may be a little bit woody at this point, but it's still edible. Typically, we stop harvesting in mid-June, and that's because as we harvest in the spring, that does weaken the plant. So we want to give the plant plenty of time to recover from that, so we leave it undisturbed the rest of the summer. So you could do it, but it shouldn't be a common practice.
Okay, all right. Now, if I have trees that are lost all their leaves, I think it's too wet where they are. I scratch the bark and it's green. Does that mean it'll come back in the spring?
I think that's a good sign, Margaret. You don't want to be deceived by trees that drop their leaves early, really any year, but this has been a stressful year. So what I look for is what you've just done. You look for the inner bark, and if that still is green, that's a good sign. Look for the buds. There should be evidence of buds that are set for next year. And if the twigs are still supple, then... the tree just took an early vacation, and you'll see it again next spring.
All right, Margaret, thank you for your call. Let's do some email questions here. This one's from Anita. She says, I live near Rock Island, Illinois. I have two white oak trees in my yard, which are about 90 years old. They're too close for comfort, too close to my house, and the tops appear to be dying. Overall, they're probably not healthy trees anymore and may be a danger. These trees are tall and straight with long, wide branches. I know that there are buyers of standing timber, but I don't know who to call in this area. So what's your advice?
Well, I would actually have her get online and contact the Illinois forestry folks over there and talk to them. But the one thing I'll tell her, in urban areas and around houses, loggers are not tree services. So often, unless it's a really high valuable tree like walnut, really high quality, a lot of times log buyers aren't interested in trees near building structures because there could be metal, nails, wire fencing, you name it, things that can cause actually quality issues with the wood quality, but also danger to
liabilities
and stuff like that. And so a lot of times it's really difficult to do that. I would also talk to the master gardeners in the Rock Island area to see if there's any local sawmills. That sometimes there's a few niche markets out there where guys will take urban trees, especially if they're looking for smaller pieces, for furniture, stuff like that. They can work around metal and stuff like that. But a lot of times, again, log buyers don't have the equipment to come and take it. But a lot of times, if they can get it on the ground first and it's a decent log, then they may be able to get a log buyer to come for that individual tree.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Richard Duran, Iowa State University horticulture specialist. We've got Jeff Isles, professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State, and Mark Vitosh, DNR forester. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, Jeff Isles, professor and chair of the horticulture department at Iowa State, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University horticulture specialist. And they are here to answer your questions. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or call 866-780-9100. And I promised a few email questions, and we only got to one before the break. So let's do a few more here. Aaron asks, is there a best time of year to have a maple tree trimmed?
You know, it might be easier, Aaron, to say when I wouldn't trim a maple, and I'm not a big fan of pruning maples just as they're breaking bud in the spring. And then as we get into fall, I tend to leave them alone then as well. But dormant season pruning seems to work for many species, and as Mark mentioned earlier in the program, summer pruning is a good time too. So you've really got a pretty broad window of opportunity, but dormant and summer works quite well. I'd be a little careful pruning this time of the year.
All right. And she has a question for Richard, too. She says, I recently moved into a different home, and there's a large flower bed that hosts a large amount of daffodils and tulips in the spring. Once they die off, however, the area is left looking a little sad. Is it possible to plant something in the same area as these bulbs without hurting the bulbs?
Yes, you can. Maybe some daylilies, for example, something that develops kind of later in the year. So maybe daylilies, maybe some asters or mums that kind of develop later on and get maximum size toward late summer and fall.
All right. And here's a question from Susan in Charles City. I'm interested in putting in a raised garden bed in my yard, but I'd love some basic information on getting started. I've looked a bit at the Extension website for more information, and I'm curious about a good way to get started. How can I determine if I should just garden in the soil instead of raised beds? Is it best to prepare any kind of garden bed in the fall or wait until spring?
Well, as far as a raised bed, if we had, for example, a very wet, poorly drained soil, then a raised bed makes sense, okay? Or if maybe we're having trouble leaning over, that type of thing, then a raised bed makes sense. But if you have a good, well-drained soil, if you can do your typical activities outdoors, then I would have the garden in the ground.
All right. I think raised beds are aesthetic for a lot of people.
It is. Also, you can do that too. Right. But if you have a good, well-drained soil, it's kind of nice in that if you want to work the soil, if you have a tiller, you can just go right in there, and it's pretty easy to do.
All right. And her other question about, is it best to prepare a garden bed in the fall or wait until spring?
I typically like to clean it up. And if it is a fairly flat area, then go ahead and work it up as far as till it or use the shovel. And then in the spring, it's ready to go.
All right. And here's one from Julie in the Quad Cities. We ordered two pawpaws and two pecans from our local soil and conservation district. They'll arrive in mid-October. Anything special we need to know about how or where to plant?
Well, just make sure it's a good, well-drained soil, plenty of sun, and give them good spacing. Now, the pecans, especially in the northern areas of their region, they may grow, but they may not develop good fruit. So they might have a nice tree, but they may not have a good nut crop.
All right. And am I remembering correctly that pawpaw trees are a little more tolerant of shade than some others?
They'll take some, yes.
Okay. All right. And let's get back to the phones. Susan on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a batch of century oaks that are growing on some land that we have up by Brushy Creek State Park. And I know from listening to the show that what I've seen in past years is tatters, and that you have said that it shouldn't hurt them as long as it doesn't happen year after year. This year was really bad. I saw tatters early in the spring, and when I look up at my trees now, it looks like I'm looking through a honey locust. Little tiny leaflets is all we have, and maybe 12 or 15 trees affected. Is there any way to make the farmers stop spraying herbicides and affecting the trees?
So I'll go first, Susan, and then I'll let the other my colleagues weigh in. This is a this has occupied a lot of our time the last 10 years, maybe longer.
22 to be exact.
22 years. So you can see Mark has a real vested interest in this topic. This has been a rough year for oak tatters, and you know, we drive around the state. We look at the incidence of oak tatters, and it seems to get worse every year. Let me just back up and correct one thing you said. Is I was of the opinion too that it was just one of those curiosities and doesn't really hurt trees. I'm now of the opinion that if it does happen year after year, I think it does weigh on a tree. And as we talked about at the beginning of the program, these things tend to accumulate. So if we have drought and we have something else, and then we have oak tatters ganging up on the same tree, then that in fact could shorten its lifespan. I can't address your comment that you made just a minute ago about the cause or why this happens or who's at fault. That's a topic maybe we could have over a beer sometime. But I don't even know where to begin with that. All we know is that it happens year after year, and it seems to hit the same trees year after year. But it's hit and miss around the state, around the counties, even in somebody's yard, and it's a conundrum. And I wish we had money and people and resources to thoroughly investigate this because it's problematic, it's troubling, it's also extremely interesting. I mean, from a pure biologic standpoint, it's a really interesting topic, but I just wish we had more answers than questions.
Mark, you want to add anything there?
Well, the only thing I would say, Susan, is if you feel that herbicides might be involved, there's nothing you can do this year. But if you're in a rural area and these trees are in a rural area and you feel that herbicides could be associated, you could call the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship next year if you start to see symptoms, and just report it and let them investigate it and look at the situation. You know, again, as Jeff said, we truly don't know if this is herbicide. There's evidence that could lean that way, but there's evidence of other things too that don't make a lot of sense. So again, we're back and forth all the time what causes this. But there is a system in Iowa. If you feel that herbicides could be associated with damage to plants, you can call the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, and you need to call, I believe it's within 60 days of when that damage occurs. So the earlier the better. And you can make a report, and they can, if they feel it's needed, they can come investigate, they can take samples. The challenge is, if this is herbicides, one of the challenges with this is a lot of times it may not be a field right next to you. It could be from other places. Again, we don't know if that is it, how it works, how it moves. So it is a challenge. But there is a system in place that if you want to report it, you can. And you can go online, and they, through the Pesticide Bureau, they actually have a number that you can call or send an email to make that request.
Okay. Aren't there other states, though, that are participating in lawsuits against Monsanto, for example, about spraying that's killed other species, other crops?
Those are a little different situations. One specific one down south is with dicamba. Bob Hartzler, I know, has been on this and talked a lot. There's been some specific relations to that. But again, as Jeff said, there is some research that has shown some stuff related to potential herbicides with this, but there's also been a lot of questions from Iowa State and other researchers that we haven't had enough research to really say that, yes, we know for sure that this is the cause.
And Susan, you might want to go back. We did had a conversation about oak tatters on Talk of Iowa not too long ago, and you might want to go back and check out that conversation on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you so much for your call. Next up, we've got Steve in Mason City. Hi, Steve. I guess we don't have Steve in Mason City. Let's try Marcy in Andover. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, I've got an oak tree question. I know from your show that we shouldn't be trimming them until late February, March, but I've got one that we grew from an acorn that's only about 2.5 foot tall, and because deer chewed it off, it's got 2 liters, almost to the ground, like 4 inches above the ground is where it divides. Can I safely lop that other half off?
Sure. In a couple months.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. I jumped you on that
one. Tree away that made me nervous.
No, dormant season, but right, you've got to do something. You don't have to. We're not going to come and storm the Bastille, but yeah, you should form a central leader. You probably have a great root system with that plant. So, yes, that tree has a bright future.
And if you don't, and this is great for folks that have trees like this, if you don't, when you have 2 leaders that come together like a V, that's usually a very weak connection. So as they get bigger, the potential for those to split apart is really high. So basically pick the straightest and the best connected one and take the other one off.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Marcy. Roger is up next in Windsor Heights. Hi, Roger. All right. I think we've lost Roger as well. Let's go to Linda in Iowa City. Hi, Linda.
Hi. So good to hear you guys every Friday. I love it. One question. My Rose of Sharon is blooming now.
Mm-hmm.
What is the time of year that you can prune a Rose of Sharon?
I would do so late in the dormant period, basically maybe mid to late March, early April.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Don in Ames. Hi, Don.
Yeah, good morning.
What's your question? Yeah.
Okay, what it is I've got clumps of tall fescue all through my lawn. It's pretty unsightly, so what I did was I went around, sprayed them all with Roundup to kill them.
Okay.
Now I'm trying to till those spots up and reseed them. I'm just wondering if there's a better way I can do that. They're really hard to till because of all the dead grass.
Well, basically, you have to somehow get the seed into the soil. How big areas are these?
Well, most of them are just maybe a foot or two in diameter.
Yeah.
I have some larger areas that might be, 5 square feet.
Okay. One option would be to go ahead and maybe core aerate the entire yard where you pull out plugs of soil and you run over the yard maybe 3-4 times, pull out all these plugs, and then you can go out to these areas that are basically bare and you can sow some grass seed. You can actually do the whole yard if you wish. And I think next week would be a good time because with all the moisture, it should dry out enough where you can core aerate next week. Very good results, and then go ahead and sow some grass seed.
Yeah, I've done a good job with this lawn. The only problem I've got left is this tall fescue. And, I just took it upon myself to kill all those areas and try to reseed them, but I'm finding it very hard to till those spots up.
Yeah, there's no other way to get rid of the tall fescue if you don't like it. The only way you can do that is to destroy it completely and start over. So no other way. Otherwise, you just kind of tolerate its presence.
All right, Don, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few emails here. This is from Dan. We have a large old maple tree, 50 plus years in our backyard, that has a 15 to 18 inch diameter branch that juts out horizontally about 12 feet above the ground. Mm. So a big one. We would like to have that branch removed, but we're worried that doing so would ultimately harm the tree. Can we safely do that?
Sure. There are proper techniques to use, and of course, safety is of paramount importance, so this might be a job better left to professionals. It's going to leave a large wound. It would have been better had the branch been removed when it was smaller, but without seeing the tree and without knowing any more information, yes, it can be done, and just be careful. Find a good arborist. And you know, a branch like that, I always worry about it causing trouble for people that walk underneath it. So maybe there's a compelling reason to remove it. But the tree, I'm sure, will be fine. It'd be good to see a picture. I guess, Charity, and I don't know if we have a way of receiving pictures from clients, but that would be one that'd be kind of fun to see a picture of.
All right. Well, you can send an email to Jeff Iles at Iowa State University.
This afternoon.
All right. Look him up. All right. Laura has this question in Fort Dodge. I planted a hydrangea this summer, and in the last few weeks, it has gotten rust-colored spots on the leaves. Mm-hmm. It started on two or three leaves, and it has spread over about half the plant now. Do you know what might be causing this?
Not sure on that, but the best thing would be as the leaves fall, basically remove them from the area and destroy them so they're not there, if it is a foliar disease, to reinfect next year's foliage.
All right. Let's do a few more email questions here. This one is from Chris. We had lots of cherries, about 80 cups from our tree this year. However, they were very small, so it took forever to get the 80 cups. Do you have any suggestions on how to promote growth of larger cherries?
Boy, not much you can do on that. If they produce heavily, then the berries may be smaller than normal. If they have a smaller crop, then they may be bigger. But there's really not much you can do. The only thing would be if, for example, the period in May and June is quite dry, maybe some watering might increase the size of the fruit.
All right. Here's a question from Susan in Jewell. I'm collecting flower seeds from marigolds, blue, delphiniums, lavender, etc. What's the best way to store them to plant next spring? Should I put them in a Ziploc plastic bag and put them in the refrigerator, or should I keep them in the freezer?
The main thing would be to keep them dry and in a cool place. So it could be a cupboard. It could be the refrigerator. You don't need to put them in the freezer, but it should be a cool, dry place. Definitely not moist or wet. So dry and cool.
All right, here's one from Michelle. We planted a weeping willow tree about 5 years ago. Oh. A deer gouged the baby trunk a year later before the protective fencing went up. In spite of the damage, it seemed to thrive until about 2 weeks ago when the leaves suddenly turned brown and dropped. Is it a goner?
Well, Charity, this is another one of those that we really would need to see some photographic evidence. So I don't know why the leaves dropped early. The tree might still be alive, but it'd be good to see some photographs, and maybe we could help the client that way.
All right.
I would use the scrape method, as he mentioned earlier, to look for green and those kind of things. And then if the top dies and it starts to sprout from the base next spring, then they could try to restructure that tree.
And Jeff, did I hear you laugh when I said weeping willow tree?
Well, it's something in my throat, I guess. No, weeping willows are fine trees. My wife is always campaigning for one in our yard, which would be a really horrible idea. So it's like what I'm gonna go back to Carter. I mean, right tree, right place. So weeping willows have a place, but not in my yard.
Just crab apples, right?
Well, we've got to move down from that too, Mark. That was a cheap shot.
It's the end of the day.
We are out of time. Jeff Iles, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mark Vitosh, Department of Natural Resources, Forester, and Richard Duran, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Horticulture Specialist. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.